You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stopped, opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text LOSE to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text LOSE to 200-300. That's LOSE to 200-300. LOSE to 200-300.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings.
Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
Welcome to episode 34 of the Meadowlarkers. Howard, you missed the Larry Bird episode, but here we are, episode 34. We're going to call it the Paul Pierce.
The Paul Pierce, yes.
Since we have Leja Clarendon here, Leja, is there a famous 34 in the WNBA instead of me calling out NBA players here?
Ooh, don't put me on the spot.
Well, Chris, you know what? Whitty will do some Googling right now, and we'll edit it in.
Amani McGee Stafford? I'm trying to think of a 34, yeah. It's definitely a post player.
Or just who's your favorite 34?
Yeah. Leja's like, we're here to talk about things other than my favorite player's number.
You know what?
I'm like, seven, my number?
We are joined by Leja Clarendon, who is a WNBA All-Star, played at Cal, and for the purposes of this conversation, Leja, the first vice president of the WNBA Players Association. Also, we have on the line Howard Bryant and Amin El Hassan. So Leja, we wanted to have you on because of the last few months and everything that we have seen with the Brittany Griner situation in Russia and how it has, the conversation around it has ebbed and flowed. Can you take us back just to the beginning when you first heard that Brittany was detained and what the conversation was within, the WNBA collective?
Ooh, I mean, it was shock for one. And I think a lot of fear, a lot of disbelief that this had really happened. Like, so many players have, played overseas, have played in Russia, have loved a lot of those teams over there, have had really lucrative careers where they're treated really well. So I think it was a really caught off guard at first about like, oh, misunderstanding maybe, like, is this really happening? And then the details kind of unfolded of like, wait, we're just finding out she had been detained. Hold on. And it kind of went deeper and deeper. And then even from a strategy perspective, you're like, what can we do now? Right? Like, we're trapped here, in the States. Our season hasn't started yet, but it was like started to look more and more like the WNBA season was going to kick off without like BG here. And not because BG was late coming back from overseas, which is very custom in our league for people to be playing well into April, May, because their league is still going, but to the point that like BG's detained in a country that is not ours in the middle, and then Russia invaded. So then in the middle of a war, and all of a sudden BG became an asset in the middle of a, global conflict.
Yeah. It seems like we've gone through a couple different iterations at this point of what the best course of action is. Not that so many of us in the States, there's not a whole lot we can do. I mean, even someone like you in a, you know, a position of leadership in the WNBA PA, there's not a whole lot to do. But in the very beginning, it was clear that the messaging was, let's lay as low as possible, because can you take us through kind of what the thinking was at that point?
Yeah, it was to make sure BG was safe first and foremost. And I think from a strategy perspective, like not to necessarily tip them off that, like, of course, we were in a rush to get BG home, but not to make it worse that they were panicked. We know BG represents what, right? Biden's base, a lot of Black women in this country. So you didn't want to rile it up too much to the point that it made BG like an higher asset. So it was very strategic to like be quiet. You saw a lot of WNBA players just like not say a word about it, which is, if you looked as a media person, you might be like, this is weird. This is a league that like is not afraid to get on and talk some shit and like rile things up for, even against their own owner, right? Against like a Kelly Loeffler. So it was very strategic to like, just stay quiet. Don't ruffle any feathers until we get more details. Trust BG's team, trust Lindsay Kagawa Colas, BG's agent. There were people a lot higher pay grades than us that were on it. And again, it was bigger than being in the States. Whereas like, you know, we know our own democracy and our own, as flawed as it is, right? With the elections and stuff, we know maybe the power we have in the States to talk about things, but this is, again, it was bigger. We're talking international politics with a dictator. So it was just smart on our end to just wait until we got the next marching orders. And now that's more about having the conversations, putting pressure on, you know, the White House to bring BG home. And you haven't seen the response, quite frankly, that you would want for someone like that who's stuck over there.
Yeah, what was the chain of your information? Where were you getting most of your information from? Was it a combination of the league? Did you have connects in the State Department directly? Where was it coming from?
We were getting directly from BG's agent, who had their connections in the State Department and their lawyers, more international lawyers. So that was our direct conversations. It would be my wife Jessica was on a lot of those calls too. So it'd be like Lindsay, Terry Jackson, our executive director for the WNBPA, our Players Association, would kind of get on, disseminate the information, and then we would disseminate it through some of our other chats. So you kind of have that chain of command that just says, hey, here's the update. A lot of times, unfortunately, it wasn't much of an update besides like, you know, BG's safe. BG is, you know, someone's checking on her every couple of days. We know that. We can't tell you anymore because, right, it's like protected information. Just wait in the waters. Wait to see what happens. And so we just kind of been trusting. And I think that's kind of the power of our league, too, is that, like, we will mobilize for each other. Like, people weren't making it about themselves at that moment to be like, well, I'm as BG. I'm going to go talk about it and say things. It was just like, no, like, what's best for BG in this moment is to be smart and strategic at this time.
When did you see that? I'm sorry. I mean, I was going to just throw one follow-up because that was the strategy. And for the most part, even most American journalists followed it as well, trying to, you know, do the right thing on this. And then it shifted. And then it became, okay, this is, I think even the State Department had said that she was essentially a political prisoner in her own, in you know, whatever verbiage that they had used.
Like wrongfully detained. Yeah.
Wrongfully detained. Exactly. And what was the mood then? Then how do you all then decide, okay, do we change our tactics? What do we do?
Yeah, then you have people in the midst of a season, right, that's kicked off and started, which one is not being played in a bubble, which was a lot of the time and space and energy people had to mobilize. We were all trapped in Florida playing games every other day with nothing else to do. Not that people don't care about BG, but I think it is hard. People's seasons have kicked off. Now you have, hey, how do we strategize on the fly when you're playing a 90-day season in 90 days, 30-something games? And it was then, okay, how do we get the awareness out? What's the merch going to look like? And, okay, there's 12 teams in 12 different markets. Do you wear the shirts when your team is playing Phoenix? Do you just wear them on the ESPN game when there's the most coverage? All those kind of conversations kick off. And I know, again, Kagawa Colas was, like, trying to get the pins to people who are working the games, and you got to get the messaging out again, right, about focusing on BG's character, who she is to this league, who she is to so many people. And then you also had the shoe drives that teams are doing across the league, which is, again, a thing that BG has done every year. Own Accord has given out shoes to houseless people who need them. And so that's something every team is trying to adopt now to honor BG, you know, during this time, and kind of step up and amidst having to play. And then everyone also put the BG on the court, the 42, to just kind of honor them. It was really a weird moment, I think, to start the season with them not being there, like in a very solemn moment.
How much do we know about the conditions of her detainment?
We know that BG's safe and I think taken care of. So we don't know, I think maybe with a couple other people, but we don't know outside. We don't know necessarily. I don't know what, you know, she's eating or I don't think she, we can write emails to BG and I know that they're read and right. then BG can receive them, but there's no correspondence back. So no, I've written them a few emails, just sometimes I'm watching the game and talking about missing them. Other times it's like, you know, just thinking about you, like.
How many others are detained with her under the same kind of circumstances?
I don't know, maybe 3 or 4. I'm not sure. Yeah.
When the messaging seemed to shift right around the start of the WNBA season and it went from like, let's keep this low key to the We Are BG with like trying to discuss about how her detainment wasn't like, it wasn't an issue that BG is like the solo, you know, athlete who found themselves in this position, that there's hundreds of WNBA players who are going overseas all the time. Can you walk us through like what the collective thinking was among the WNBA players of how to shift that messaging away from like keep it low to what they wanted to say about the situation?
Yeah, originally it was still, so coming up with the We Are BG, like to your point, was very much like that could be me, right? That was also with the Say Her Name campaign, is like Breonna Taylor could have been us, that is us, right? People go over there constantly. So just because it's BG doesn't mean it couldn't have been anyone else. And then the focus was like to talk about who BG was originally. It was to still not focus on the like, you know, her being an asset or not, or what that means, like let the State Department handle that. It was then, how do we talk about the character of who this person is, what they mean to us, how BG has done these shoe drives across in Phoenix constantly for years. It's gotten covered, but like, that's something that you just don't think about when you see this person over there. And there's all these stories being told about them of like, oh, did they have this, you know, are they rightfully or wrongfully detained? Just trying to focus on the character of who they are. And then, like I said, with the shirts and the interviews and trying to get that momentum out. And I think it's been tough also with people playing, you know, in the midst of a season about getting this messaging out.
Like the first couple of weeks when, you know, even people I knew, even folks, you know, within our company would be like, well, people should be talking about BG more. And I'd be like, well, actually that's not the goal right now. But now we're in this place where I don't have a quote unquote excuse, right? For other than the things we already know that, you know, it's she's a Black female athlete in a league that has always come up against a lot of social pressures. But when you look at the conversation over the last month, what do you want to see more of, whether it's in the press or wherever it could be?
Yeah, I want to see more storytelling about the person that BG is and more accountability and storytelling around why BG's over there, right? Like this is very much a pay equity issue. So when people bring up the question of like, oh, LeBron or some other guy wouldn't be over there this long. And we're like, first of all, they wouldn't be over there traveling commercially on their own. They wouldn't have to play in another league. Tom Brady, LeBron, these guys don't have to go somewhere else to play, to make money, to then have a, you know, better life here. They actually could just show up, do their job, be an athlete and like make bank. So the fact that BG had to go over there, I want that story to be told about like, this is an investing in women issue. And the reason like BG, you heard Sherelle, BG's partner, talk about in her interview with Angela Rye, she actually didn't even want to go back. That was her returning to Russia. And she was debating this being her last season over there. And so the fact that she had to go back over there to earn money, right? Like as an athlete who gets paid really lucratively in Russia, she was safer at home not having to do that. And so it brings to light the things that women athletes just do that's so normalized, right? It's working multiple jobs. You see like NWSL, like those type of athletes who like, they have to work other jobs. And like the W, we're a little bit further along with them, but you don't make nearly, even with the new CBA, it's not nearly what BG and players who play in countries like Russia have the opportunity to make. So I want that story to be told a little bit more about why she was over there. And less of it like, well, that was her choice. She took the risk. It's like, we have to set up global understandings for our players going over there. This started a few years ago where it's like, you check in with the embassy because you saw a lot of things going on in the Middle East and people playing in Turkey. It was like, make sure if you're American, you check in with your embassy when you get over there, which is a normal policy to travel anyway, right? But we're going to live over there for months at a time. So think about someone coming to the States and being like, yeah, there's gun violence, there's stuff when you move to a different country that you're putting yourself at risk when you do that. And that's something that W players have had to do time and time again for years and years. And then I want BG's heart and character and like silliness and goofiness and the person. I want to see videos of, you know, her face and conversations. I've done so many panels with BG. We're drafted in the same year. And just the essence of who she is, because there's a lot going on in the States right now. There's a lot going on in the world, but like, this is one person that a lot of us really care about. And if that was your one person, you would like try and move hell and earth, right? To get that person back. That's how important she is to all of us in this league and how much of a staple she is.
Laysha, you guys, your current collective bargaining agreement doesn't expire until 2027. So it's going to be a while before you can at least force the issue in negotiation with the league. From here on, I got 5 more years. How do you think this is going to impact players who are doing the double life thing, the off season, in season, somewhere else? You think this is going to put a damper on it? Because as you noted, there are a lot of players that play in Turkey, there are a lot of players that play in China. All three of these places are volatile comparatively to, of course, just staying here domestically. How do you think the impact is going to be with your union membership as far as continuing to play overseas for money?
I mean, I think Russia is going to be a very different place. No, hands down, I'm not sure. I don't know of any athletes who've signed over there right now and what that country is going to look like and the whole global politics of it. But in 2023 coming up, is one of the first years our prioritization hits in our league. So that's kind of the rule that says you have to basically be in the W on time. So this was a ticking, I think, time bomb that was coming out of the CBA that like something, you know, I'm VP, I was on there, I negotiated it. Is that I'm like, oh, this is terrible. Whose fault is this? Is that you have to show up on time. And so that was part of what we had to negotiate with the league to get more funding, more bigger salaries, was that like they want their players here on time because there's a push pull between the timeline of overseas and here. So that's going to start to come into place. Rookies still do have an exception their first couple of years. They didn't want them to be punished to not make their money. So this was a fascinating time in the W where it's about to come to a head with what's happening with BG and prioritization hitting in the W that says, if you're late to camp, technically like they can suspend you for the entire season. So I think the league has an interesting thing coming up of, let's say, a Breanna Stewart, a BG, a like, you know, Slude, a Asia Wilson doesn't go over there. But when you look at your big, big time players, if they're like, I'm not making my money overseas, like, are you really going to suspend Breanna Stewart right, and not let her play in the W? And is Stewie going to be like, hey, I'm going to have a nice summer. Like, I made my money over there and I'm going to enjoy, right? I think those are the things. It's like, it's a really about to come to a head that I'm curious to see what comes of that. And my wife and I have actually been talking about going overseas, fascinating enough. I haven't played in like 9 years over there, but I'm going to play in somewhere like Turkey or Australia. So I still think people feel safe enough to maybe go. I think Russia is definitely going to be a different story for a lot of people though.
What was the reason for the hardlining of that on the deadline? I mean, obviously, as an economic imperative, you need that flexibility just in case you're coming in late.
Yeah, it was the league's, one of their harder lines for wanting their stars to be back on time. So the starting the season where we have maybe the Chicago versus Phoenix matchup game or Vegas, and you don't have, you know, your big hitters there and you're playing these games without your star power, you can't market because we start some of our games and you don't have those entire teams, frankly, which is a problem. And, you know, you can blame either side for it, but it's a big deal when you only have a 2 week runway for training camp and then people are late. And then depending what league you play in, you're super late. And so ideally overseas teams and the league could finally get together and just say, this is how we're going to schedule both of them. But for some reason that has not been the case. So it's fallen on the players to just be figuring out their loyalty of like, am I going to be late and just deal with it? Or am I going to leave early or play exhausted? I wish we could work more collaboratively.
I think it's really interesting when you were talking about two things. Number one, the messaging for BG, right, to humanize so people realize that this is an actual person, and who's over there who deserves the compassion, respect, all of the, you know, the actual heart that gets people home, right? And that doesn't happen in normal times for a lot of the WNBA players. Yeah. I mean, who is considered the most personable, lovable player that the, you know, which players get that dispensation? It's something that Black players talk about all the time, like who gets those labels. And I think the other thing that is sort of interesting than what you were saying too is making the historical links between and between the economics of the different sports. This is no different than what baseball players and football players went through in the 60s, the 50s, the 60s. So you can make the argument, okay, like Hank Aaron, for example, sold insurance and worked in a liquor store in the 1960s because they only got paid. I think the top salary, you know, the average salary was like $12,000. Minimum salary was $6,000. So from a framing standpoint, they're 50 years behind the men. I mean, I think one of the last years where guys had second jobs in the offseason, probably the late 70s. So you're looking at 45 years behind economically.
Yeah, that's huge. And I think particularly in a time where corporations and people are so quick to say they care about equality, I think that's the biggest thing that is coming out of this. And the, I think, hypocrisy of it, of like, we're so quick to market, to label, to market to the queer community, to put a rainbow on something, to say Black lives do matter, but like, does BG's gay Black life not matter enough to invest in women so they can stay home and be safer, so they can have a better quality of life? And really connecting those dots where like, it's actually where you put your money, your marketing power, your resources, your coverage for us, your ability to access gear. It's a holistic approach to actually change equity. And it,
yeah,
right? It's like, the racial divide is not going to happen overnight, right?
Well, who does that branding actually serve?
Yeah.
When going back to prioritization, when you think about why the international leagues and or the domestic leagues in other countries and the WNBA haven't gotten to any sort of agreement in terms of maybe making the schedules such that these athletes can do both, can comfortably do both, or as comfortable as possible having a 12-month schedule. Why don't you think, well, first of all, who do you think is more kind of entrenched and not wanting to kind of come and meet somewhere in the middle among those two sides? And then the other thing is, from the Players Association standpoint, how much impact do you guys have of bringing those two sides together?
The answer is, I don't know. I wonder if Kate knows any of this. I think someone who's played overseas longer than me would have more understanding of that question. I frankly don't know. And it's something the union has, we haven't thrown our hands up about it, but I don't know if it's FIBA and there's different leagues overseas because there's China and it's not just one entity versus the W.
Right.
I'm curious if Kate knows any of it because I don't know the answer to that.
I don't know it specifically, but this is sort of tangential. Is like the, I don't know if Leigh, if you heard back when Russia was in like its heyday with Shabtai and this famous Russian owner, he was trying to put together the equivalent of a Champions League, but for women's basketball, so that the best team in the W, you know, and then the best team in, you know, Europe and the best team wherever would come and there'd be like, you know, a group of four and they'd play like the Champions League, the best team in the world. And I think if you had something, I mean, that was like economically, fiscally stimulating for owners to actually bring them to the table to actually change things, that's really the only way you could get them to even come to the table. It's something at this point that could never fly because there's so much overlap between all of these teams. It's like,
right.
So who is Brianna Stewart playing for?
You're going to clone her. Is she playing for
the Storm against, you know, against her Russian team or, you know, wherever she's playing. But I don't think at this point there's any like monetary reason. How can you tell the Russian team that you should modify its schedule based on what BG needs when they're the ones that are actually giving BG the dollars? So, right. I mean, I don't have like an actual, like we have tried to do this and they couldn't, but that seems to be sort of the background of it.
So maybe more of a power dynamic too, of who's willing to budge or who thinks they should budge.
Yeah.
Of course, they're the main league.
That's why I ask, because you guys are the one tying thing, right? Owners on this side, owners that side, because, you know, and fight over it, but like, whoa, y'all are the ones that are actually playing. and are playing on both continents. So I feel like there is, in a weird way, a leverage play there. It's like, look, you guys want our services, so y'all need to figure this out. Yeah. Or otherwise, we're just going to continue to have these issues. But I get what you're saying, Kate. You're saying if one side is saying, well, I pay you a lot more money, that's pretty much the end of the conversation.
I think even back then, knowing it was maybe going to come to a head, like our league's going to change their dates. Like France is one of the longest leagues that plays. Like Marine Johannes just got to New York and they're historically play super late. You have the Chinese leagues that play shorter. That's what people like going over there. They're always back and home on time. But a lot of the European leagues, it's like, depends how far you go. And that's when you get your money, is when you win.
Yeah.
You get your bonuses. So,
well, what do you think about this, Leija? Because it seems like, maybe I'm not thinking about this correctly, but the biggest issue here is that the WNBA plays in the summer. Not regarding Brittany Griner and her being detained, but in what we've been talking about the last few minutes, it's, you can't create a global champions league like might be done in soccer, because there's the ability to play for two teams in 1 year. Mm. And so is there, how much of the conversation in the last CBA and the way that people in leadership in the WNBA talk about the impact playing in the summer has on whatever the future goals of the WNBA are?
Yeah. It's been hard because we battle arena availability so much already. And I do think one of the interesting things about playing in the summer is that it's when concerts happen. So that is a tough, actually would be helpful if we didn't play, but then you're battling the NBA schedule. So double headers is actually something we were like on board about and proposing. And not every W team is owned by an NBA team, but you do have some of that. So there's an easy, obvious overlap by playing our games, you know, before the men's games and kind of connecting those dots. But it's something the players were open to and we've talked about. And like Sue Bird is one of the most savvy, like quippy people that I'm so glad she served in the CBA, that she kind of always has these ideas that she comes to us about. And the double headers was one that we talked about. But I don't think the structure of the league is going to change anytime soon. We're not playing in the summer unless you get enough NBA ownership on board to actually support us, the arena availability, the practice availabilities. You think about the way the playoffs, like last year, LA was playing in some, I don't even know where, because the Clippers might have been in the playoffs, but even though they were already eliminated, we still played the whole season out in wherever the Sparks played and didn't even have Staples Center, even though Staples Center wasn't available. So for us, it's always that, are they really going to invest in us if they moved it? If Adam Silver and Kathy decided, Engelberg, to make our season in the winter months, whatever it may be, December through May or something to match the NBA, are they going to truly invest in like giving us space to practice? Or are we going to be marginalized anymore to be like, all right, you got to play 11 a.m. games because they need their shoot around at noon. And then they got to play their primetime game at 7. So we're going to kick you guys out of the arena. That's always been the push pull, and the W always gets the back burner seat. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like we've been pushed and relegated to the summer to like barely when we can possibly find a place and time and space to play. So are they going to switch the priority?
It also sounds like the WNBA is a, you know, in a really difficult position because leverage wise, they can make the emotional pull that this is your home country and this is where your visibility is, but it's not reflected in the money. So they're actually in a position where if you wanted to, but then again, now you got to leave home. Mm-hmm. This is very, very similar to the Olympics, the Winter Olympics, where the Winter Olympians never get to come home. The losers and the bobsledders, they're essentially playing an entire European season in Sweden and in Norway and those places, in Austria, because that's where the interest in their sport really is. That's where the money is. They can't even get the type of play that they need here because there are only like two major luge tracks in the United States. Yeah. And so I would imagine that one of the ways to really get at this is to, really highlight how far behind. I mean, I don't think people understand that, how far behind this is, like historically.
Yeah. And I think the W is an interesting time when like you have players who don't want to go overseas anymore and are looking for opportunities, like the Asia Wilsons who came in and were like, I'm good, or the Elena Deladons, who are like, I don't really want to play overseas, or the Skylers. It's kind of when I came in with Elena and Skylers in 2013, and you saw the shift of athletes being like, what opportunities are there at home, right? What is it, coaching? Is there, are there marketing opportunities? Are there dollars? And then you still have like the Stewies and the BGs who are like, there's how much in Russia? Like, I don't care where I'm living, like, right? You get that push pull where you still have those stars who want to go and make money. And then you have some who are like, I want to stay home, but what can I, what opportunities are there for when I stay home? And I think that is a huge miss by the W, and something, as I've only played my rookie year and I went to Prague and it was like amazing. I just played the whole year, that I was exhausted. I was like, this sucks. Like, the money is great, but for me, it was like, I'm tired and I want to have more of a life. So I took a pay cut. Like, I made $100,000 when I played in Prague, my rookie year coming out, whereas my rookie salary then was like $55,000 or something. I lived in California. So I was like, I couldn't wait till camp would start the next year. I'd be like, all right, we got that per diem. Like, I'm good. I got like cash for groceries. But at the same time, how hard it has been for me to train every year with no G League, no developmental league, no place to find a gym. Like, I'm out here at LA Fitness trying to play against some guys, or I'm training in the garage. Like, there's no infrastructure in place for the W players when they don't go overseas. Where do we go? Back to your college? Back to your hometown? Who do you train against? Do you have money to just do like pop-ups like the dudes do? Like, all right, let's meet in LA and like go train. Like, there's nothing here. So for the league to say we shouldn't go overseas and not invest in opportunities for when we're actually here, it's like they talk out of both sides.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike. And typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right. You crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
For you personally, Laysha, there's no party that wavered during these years of your career after having that experience. I know it was time, but you know, from a financial standpoint, there's no party you said, kind of got to do this again. I got to go out there and make this money.
The amount of times I was just like breaking down to my wife, or like having that moment where like the overseas might have come, and I'd be like, am I stupid? Oh my God. Like, you know, am I leaving this money on the table? Like,
right.
I got bills to pay. Like, I got, you know, like opportunity to earn money too while I can.
Right. And as an athlete, like all athletes have, you got a window of time. Like, your life is however long it is. But in terms of the amount of time you can make money playing basketball, it's this.
Yeah.
So in essence, it's not just, yeah, I could be doing this, but I'm not. But it's also like, you've got a limited amount of time to even do that, if that. So what is it that keeps you from saying what, from that temptation, I guess?
At the time, I mean, I had a bigger vision of what I wanted for my like life. And it was really an act of faith for me to not go over there and be like, all right, this money is important. Like, it's great, but I'm going to choose like my happiness, my mental health, because it's really isolating playing overseas too. It can be really tough, even with, you know, Zoom and FaceTime and all the things. So it was an act of faith for me to be like, I'm going to invest in myself. I wanted to get better too, which is really hard to do when you're playing year round. Like, I actually wanted to get better, and like, I wanted to do skill development and be like, all right, what can I add to my game? And I think that's something that has prolonged my career, because like, I got a little better every year and added something. I got stronger. I wasn't as burnt out. I came into the league like 120 pounds, getting thrown around, like blocked from behind. And I had to like get my like grown up body. And eventually I then got to that place. And then I wanted to be in a better position, like branding wise. So I really started investing myself in my public speaking, kind of building that brand as an activist. And it finally started paying off like 4 or 5 years in, like 2015, 16, that was 3 or 4 years in. I was like kind of getting that recognition, and eventually was able to like leverage my brand. And at the good time when like, people started to see the value of, I think, really like athletes as activists. And I had already been like laying the groundwork and doing that. I'd been broadcasting with the Pac-12 Network. I'd been public speaking. So like now I can do a keynote and get paid for it. Now I can do a panel. And like when these corporations are like, it's Pride Month, like we want you to come speak. I'm like, here's the number. like you want me or not? Cause I know you got money. So I'm in a really good position, like outside of basketball. And that was always really important for me. And that's not everyone's, you know, goal or venture, but it's really paid off for me to be able to leverage like my voice and my brand moving forward. And that was an act of faith that I could have looked back and be like, damn girl, you could have had like a little more money in the bank, but it worked out.
Just to bring it back to Brittany for a few minutes here, Leigh, because I think one of the variables I was thinking about when I first read that she was detained was the role of her team in Ekaterinburg, Russia, where she was playing. And also, so it's a twofold question. One is like, I know you haven't been overseas since Prague, but you've played with a lot of people who have played in China and Russia and other places. What have they said, or what's your thinking about what the mentality is when you're playing in a country that might have, you know, different policies than you're used to, but you feel like you have a protective shield of your club? Because mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I was always thinking about with Brittany in the first weeks. I was like, she must have been thinking, oh, Ekaterinburg, like I'm playing for them. I'm not really living in Russia. So can you talk us through like what players think when they're going to play in other countries about like what their citizenship actually is when they're over there?
Yeah, you rely a lot on your team. I mean, it's not unspoken. It's very much spoken between like your agent and players based on experience about like what teams are legit and what teams are going to pay you on time, what teams are going to treat you well, where you're like, ooh, that team, they're offering you a big contract, but like they're kind of shady. They don't always pay on time, right? Because there's no union over there. There's no protection. As powerful as our union is here, it's like you go over there and we're like, you could sue them and win. Like one of my friends sued her team, won, and was like still waiting to get paid the money, right? Like it's bigger than us. So when you go over there, you are relying on your team and that protections. You made a good point, Kate. It's like you're playing for them, not necessarily the global politics at play, but you are, which makes you vulnerable. And so when I had heard BG's team had tried to get her out and that didn't work, that's when it like my heart really sank, was like, wait, like that's our only power over there. Like that's the people that we trusted her to. Like when a college player goes to their institution, it's like you're trusting them to that institution to take care of them. And so that was the scariest part for BG, I think, and myself. And I was like, shit, like what now? And I think that's when it sunk in for really a lot of us.
One thing I wanted, since we have you, one thing that has been continually in the news cycle over the last like 5 months since the Sports Illustrated article about charter flights in the W, which we've talked about on here. And then Skylar Diggins-Smith tweeted, I think yesterday, about playing a back-to-back when you're flying commercial. Can you share with us? I know there's so many things at play when it comes to charter flights. It's not like, oh, there's some owners who must not love women's sports enough. It's like, no, they're actually the owners who do love women's sports, but maybe they don't have the biggest pockets. What is, from a you know, vice president of the Players Association point of view, what is your perspective on charter flights?
Oh, God. Through the curveball. My perspective is, and the players' perspective, as much as I can speak for a lot of us from internal conversations, has been understanding where we are and that we are asking for smarter scheduling and understanding of when to use charter flights. Like the people in our league are never like, oh, we got to make LeBron's salary. Oh, we got to charter every flight. We're like, all right, we're 25 years in. Like, cool. This is where the NBA was at. Like, work with us. Like the players very much are like relational with the league and want that like reciprocity back of like, all right, if you're in a back-to-back, there should absolutely be a budget for every team. Like, why can't there be, here's the budget for 12 teams. You have whatever, $1 million in the CBA, the Kathy gives you, you can spend. And then those teams can manage that budget as they see fit. If you're a team and you're like, we ain't spending none of it, like that's sports. That's why good owners make good teams who are willing to spend the money, right? Like that's why the Warriors are good. They're willing to spend money and they have like the Chase Bank Arena, which is like phenomenal, or Chase Center. So I think the growth point for the W is to get out of this, like, what's not fair and equitable in terms of like competitive advantage. Whereas like you get the Mark Davises who are trying to elevate the league. And sometimes we get in our own way by not doing simple, smart things like just creating the budget and letting people manage, or being like, which Kathy did do, I think last year in the playoffs, she was like, all right, we'll charter, I think, a team cross country because it's the playoffs. So, but there's no written like expected rule in for that right now. And so you just have this article that comes out a few months ago that says like the league didn't want to let the players charter. And now the mask mandate's been lifted. And now you have a predominantly Black and queer league that seems to be facing a health and safety issue by flying commercially still in the midst of a pandemic. Like, that's not a good look to me. And that didn't feel good as a player to say like, wow, does the league really have our back? Did the league really just not potentially take a charter deal that could have helped us for the next 3 years that apparently Josiah was proposing? Like these kind of swirling things where you just, you want the league to have your back the same way the players seem to invest and have their backs. Why prioritization or like doing the marketing or the appearances that we do, because we do care about this league. Like it's a business, but it's something we want to see down the line for many other people.
Well, and this is the free market question. Do you want a free market or don't you? And it's always interesting to me when people talk about free markets. They love free markets until we're talking about sports. Then suddenly the market's not free. Mm. And it was the same way in the other sports as well. When you had some of the owners in baseball, they all get this revenue sharing money, at least the teams that are qualifying for revenue sharing. Some of them put the money back into their teams. Some of them buy private planes and the players never see that money at all. Mm. And so I understood the argument. I understood that, okay, well, if we create this two-tiered system where the Joe Sy's of the world and the Mark Davises of the world can treat their players with luxury, and then we have the other owners that can't. Well, isn't that how it works? I mean, isn't that sort of how it works? I mean, the Oakland A's plane couldn't even get cross country. When I used to cover them, they had to stop in Kansas for fuel, where the Yankees had a charter that could fly from Los Angeles to London without any refueling.
That's such a good detail right there.
Not all charters are created
alike. Not all charters are created equal. And the A's players were like, yeah, we got in at 5 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, why? We had to stop and get fuel in Kansas. And this is in the 90s, yeah. 2000s.
Yeah.
I'm curious, you know, when we talk about raising salaries in a salary cap sport, there's two ways to do it. One is we got to get a bigger BRI split. The other is we got to grow the pie. As a VP in the Players Association, let's assume the league is saying hell no to the BRI split. It is what it is. Deal with it. What are some ways that you think the pie could be grown that the league's not thinking outside the box enough?
Ooh, ways the pie could be grown?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. This is like the plate. It's such a big question. I don't know who the answer is in terms of, is it Fanatics? Is it the way we sell our jerseys? Is it the branding of it, like the opportunity for revenue and merch? Because that's something I'm like, Kate could be nodding their head over and over and over again, is the opportunity to buy people's jerseys. And that's the league's thinking about it. But I think how well they're doing it and how well, how accessible they are for people to get access and buy them on a daily, on a like, I had someone tell me this past season that it was at the Final Four in Minneapolis that the WNBA Lynx jerseys were not for sale at the Final Four. And the Final Four was in Minneapolis. Like the Minneapolis. Coming to our thing. Like, and Minnie is, you know, I'm not on that team anymore, but one of the better teams in this league. So it was kind of like, that was one of those things where I was like, how does that happen? Like who is that on? How do we drop that ball? Because that was however many thousand people I was at the game in the Reno were like, Aaliyah Boston went off, beats UConn. It's historic. Like the missed opportunity for just revenue sold that day and growing the pie. Yeah. It's those kind of like small insidious ways that I don't know who's dropping those balls and where we're missing those at.
One of Kate's ideas is that the league is leaving money on the table by being attached to the NBA in terms of media rights, right? Everything is just a throw in and you get the WNBA for free if you invest in that. Is there any prospect for that being spun off for you guys to be able to negotiate your own media rights?
Good question. I mean, I see our games. I see opportunity. I think Kathy's doing a good job of, like, which a lot of people complain about, and I do right now too, is like the games are everywhere. They're scattered. Mm-hmm. It's like they're on Amazon, they're on Twitter, yeah. they're on Instagram, they're just like everywhere. They're not really on Instagram, but like they're not in any one place. And she's trying creative things to like get them on different streaming platforms, but it's really scattered. So I think there's opportunity there, but I think there needs to be more streamlined. Like if they are Amazon Prime, like Amazon terrible, but they take over the world, and like, at least everyone knows all I got to do is buy Amazon Prime, share it with my friends. Like then you get the power of Amazon marketing us, and we're detached from the NBA in that way. And we have our rights, but I think the scatteredness right now, we're like piecemealing it. Like we're not with the ESPN completely, but then we're not with anyone. And so I think that's a really big growth point. And to Kate's point, I think from a general branding perspective is our league is the most radical, phenomenal, like, I think diverse in gender expression and sexuality. And we are very different than the NBA in that way. Like we are the league that flipped ascendancy. We are the league that should be marketed in terms of like how radical we are. Like there's no, as it reminds me kind of Democrats of like this middle base, we're going to get these people. I'm like, if you're fucking watching Brittany Griner and Leyshia Clarendon and Simone Augustus, like this person who like had top surgery, like, you're probably okay with trans people to some degree, right? Like we are marketing us, which I think the league is doing a better job of, but we still kind of, you saw with like the anthem and some of these push pulls of like, our league should be leading the way in a lot more things and just be a little more unapologetic about like, this is who we are. And I think that's a way to carve out a niche for us because we are a small league, but it's a big entertainment business. So like, how do we separate ourselves from these other, industries, these other teams and businesses in this league is by like being actually who we are, which right now that's everything corporations are saying they want to invest in Black women and in queer people, and they want to put money in that. And so like, here's our radical league. Now put your money where your mouth is and invest in us because this is who we are. Like, we're not trying to be anybody else.
Yeah. And you're talking to different people. I mean, I think that is the thing that sports folks don't get. All sports fans aren't the same. NASCAR is not marketing itself to NBA fans necessarily. Maybe there's some crossover there. Look at the way, hockey in a lot of markets markets itself as the not Black sport a lot of times. I mean, they don't do it directly, but they know who they're talking to. And there's a reason for that. And so there's all kinds of different ways, if you just believe in the size of that pie, the size of that market, that we don't need to worry about offending the barstool guy. The barstool guy's not watching this anyway, you know? Or do you believe that, okay, the only way this can work is if we cultivate that person and bring them into this? That doesn't sound like the winner.
That's what it is, I'm out.
Right? That doesn't sound like the winner.
Yeah. It's funny, Howard, because when you said NASCAR, I thought you were going to say Formula One. I think that's a great comp there in that, people who like NASCAR don't necessarily like Formula One and vice
also,
versa.
Yeah.
And so there is, like you just said, like, there's a huge market for almost everything. There's money out there for everything. So the idea, imagine if you were saying, hey, I'm starting to sell these NASCAR rights, and also I'm going to throw Formula One in there. Wait a second. This thing has its own fan base. It's humongous. It's making a bunch of money. Why are we? Because they're both cars. We're putting them all together.
Thinking creatively. That's yep. The reason. You know, thinking, and I think that a lot of times people get into this, and especially when your heart's not into it, you just say, "Okay, sports," or yeah. "Okay, this is a W, so we have to," you know, it can survive as an add-on. Like one of the things that Kate and I've talked about for, and I mean, on the one of our first Metal Arcas as well, was I remember being in California. I really liked the ABL. I liked the fact that it had nothing to do with the NBA. I liked the fact that it was its own thing. Mm. And they did what they did. And the you know, and obviously because Stanford was such a great women's basketball team as well, that they had a built-in base similar to the way UConn did, but it was its own thing. Believe in it.
So earlier you said that you wish there was more coverage about who Brittany was as a person and kind of describing her. That, well, this is a podcast. This is coverage. I'm going to ask you, put you on the spot. Can you give us a story about Brittany that would just kind of crystallize what kind of person she is?
A story?
Like you said, she's fun and she's goofy. Yeah. Give us a story about how fun and goofy she is.
Oh, okay. Mike Suter.
Lay, if you want to think, I have one. Or do you have one?
No, I have one about being in Spain.
Okay, go for it.
I played with BG in Spain and in the World Championships. So I played for USA in Spain. Won a gold medal. It was amazing. But during one of the practices or early games, like friendly games, BG gets her tooth knocked completely halfway out, like kind of split. And we're in Spain. There's no like dentists we're about to go to again. We're not in our country. Like, we have our trainer with us who's like, ah, that sucks. So this person, there's a picture you can find, has a half tooth, like for the rest of, like, while we're winning a gold medal with Dawn Staley, like her first like tour with the team. And just the heart and spirit of what BG is like so lighthearted and brings so much joy to people around her, that she was like, in her very Texas countryness, was just like, just call me Buck for the rest of the trip. So like, they just started going by like Buck, like this country ass person who was like, and it was just that little bit of lightheartedness to like who they are, that just like embrace something like that, that would happen. So I think about them like being over there of like trying to keep that positivity and that lightheartedness. And like, when I picture BG, I'm like, she's probably making friends with the people over there. Right. And like, it's probably the one that's chit chatting with folks and like, is also trying to keep spirits high because they have that goofiness and silliness about them that is like, doesn't take life too serious. And that's something that I really just cherish about them and always appreciate being around them. They have this light about them.
Yeah. So I was just chime in on this, because Leija, you'll appreciate this too. When I was in Russia doing a story with Brittany and Diana Taurasi playing on Ekaterinburg and for Howard and Amin, Diana's notoriously vegan, right? Like Kyrie Irving. And the two of them, Diana and BG, were talking about how Diana only at that time drank like almond milk. And Brittany was like, how are you drinking almond milk? Almonds ain't got no titties. And it just like was like the perfect Brittany comeback. Almonds ain't got no titties. And I was like, okay, that is Brittany Griner right there. Yeah. But Lay, just to wrap it up, what can you tell us, like looking forward, about what you know or what the plan is, or like trying to get Brittany out of Russia? Like, what are the milestones you're looking at? Like, what can we expect over the next, you know, few weeks, months?
Yeah, it's people visiting wearebg.org. It's got all the resources and steps on there. And it's really trying to mobilize and draw attention to Biden, to the White House, to tag them. I'm like, do we need a march on Washington? Like, that's the kind of energy I'm bringing to. Like, is that the next thing, to march up to the White House in some kind of protest, to just put the pressure on Biden, letting him know that, like, this is somebody, this is actually an American hero, someone we care about. This is a person who matters deeply to this country, and we need you to bring them home. And we've seen recently, like, unfortunately, how long it can take for some people who are captured over there to get home. So it's just that kind of constant buzzing in people's ears of like, we've not forgotten about BG. Like, BG matters to us. BG matters, like, continually poking the White House and not letting them forget, not letting BG's name like lose our mouths, lose it on ESPN, lose it on TV, lose it, you know, during the finals. So they know that this person matters deeply to us, and we're not going to let this go.
Yeah, and especially knowing that the dual effect of this, on the one hand, you've got an American citizen who is being detained, while at the same time, I think the White House announced today another $1 billion in aid to Ukraine. So this is just going to be more and more contentious, and you've got a citizen in the middle of this.
Yeah.
All right, Leija. Well, we figured it out. It's episode 34. It's the Sylvia Falls episode. So there we go. That's our 34, keeping it in the W. So thank you. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for all the work you do.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike. And typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right. You crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.